Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Attention Please podcast, now on video. If you like this podcast, kindly like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. So today's podcast is on the Israel-Palestinian conflict. Okay, that's a heavy topic, and I'm back with a heavy topic after a while. So one can go on and on about this. I think there's a lot of material. So for those of you who are not educated, I would urge you to educate yourself on the problem. And there are great resources available online, and there's of course through Vrathi. So you know there's a lot of and this podcast and what I'm going to say now is not supposed to be the first thing. It should not be the first thing you hear about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I'm pretty sure that you've heard something about it. You've made up your mind about it and who's right, who's wrong. And so much of what I'm going to say is not going to change your opinion either way. But let me go ahead and say it anyways. So the way I look at the Israel-Palestinian conflict is that it's a tribal conflict. It is a classical old world tribal conflict with endless cycles of violence over possession over a piece of land that both the tribes call their homeland. It's possibly the oldest stereotype of war that has existed in human civilization. So straight off the bat, I honestly feel that even though this is possibly the only solution, but the solution will not work, is that a two-state solution, kind of like India and Pakistan, where you have two independent countries that stay together. They obviously, you know, the word coexisting, at least in terms of India and Pakistan, is a very loose term given the number of wars we have fought. But essentially two independent countries stay with a clearly demarcated boundary. But in this case, given the history, I honestly don't feel that a two-state solution is possible. Because long-term, and this is again a characteristic of tribal conflict, is that no tribe is going to coexist with another. It's just not possible in a tribal conflict. Each tribe, in this case, you know, the Israel and Palestine, each of these tribes, they are working from a very ancient conception of domination over the other tribe. So that's really what's driving both of them. And I approach this purely from a centrist perspective. So I might end up pissing off both sides in this case. So the way it is, and that's to me is the most realistic way of looking at it. And the problem with the tribal conflict is ultimately the tribes aren't just the tribes that are settled there. It's global. So it's the European is basically made up whichever way you are based on your tribal affiliation in this case. So coming back to what I was saying is that this old world archetype of what a war is, that the vanquished tribe is basically killed, absorbed, or they live on as second class citizens. So honestly, this is the only way this tribal conflict will ever resolve itself. Though I don't think that I'll see its resolution in my lifetime. But I just feel that a two-state solution, while obviously the most moral solution, is just not possible given the two sides. And both sides have legitimate grievances against the other. And that's what happens when you have an endless cycle of violence over a piece of land that spans centuries. So there is deep hatred on both sides. Just acknowledge this. When I see a video of a Hamas mother saying that she's proud that her son killed babies. I mean, the depth of programming, the depth of hatred, you have to understand. And I've seen videos of Israeli influencers mocking dead children, claiming that they're all, you know, mocking dead Palestinian children and putting ash over their face. It's also the hatred is, I mean, besides of course that it's terrible, it's just the hatred that one tribe has for the other. I mean, they're claiming that they're all acting. The dead Palestinian children, they're all acting. So both of them are extreme. And again, I'm not saying this person is right or that person is right, this tribe is right, that person. I'm just saying we have to understand the nature of the conflict, that it is a tribal conflict and there is enormous wells of hatred on both sides. And each side can say there are very good reasons to hate each other. They can point to one cycle of this endless conflict. And both of them can make equally strong or equally weak justifications of that. So, and I've also seen online that is, depending on which tribe you associate with, you're either incredibly credulous as to the information emanating from one side or superbly skeptical about all other information from the other side. So everything that the other side puts out, depending on what you consider other side, you will never believe. It's been made by AI, though that they're dead children, they're made by AI. And I'm not even saying which side dead children I'm talking about, because unfortunately that is the nature of a tribal conflict. Children do not have any tribe. A dead child is a dead child, but not in this case. So, and also the other thing is that both sides will use either Islamophobia or anti-Semitism to quell any kind of legitimate dissent. So that's also there. I've been seeing these television debates, and you know, the other side will say you're Islamophobic, the other side will say anti-Semit, end of story. But as an aside, this is actually why they don't want you to say that the academics, progressive academics, say Hindu-phobia doesn't exist, because they don't want to give Hindus that card. That's it. They want to deny them that card. So just a side note, that's why this is such an important issue, and which is why I say it again and again. If Hindu phobia is made up, then obviously what Pakistan is doing or what Bangladesh is doing to Hindus, that's obviously made up, because there is nothing called Hindu phobia. So that is why this is such a pernicious narrative. And I'm just sometimes stunned that this actually gets a respectability in US academia, people who say this. But coming back to the Israel-Palestinian conflict, what is the predominant marker for this conflict? So the predominant marker for this conflict is obviously religion. For those of you, and there's a little side note of history, I won't go into too much depth of it. Initially, it was a racial. It was a racial conflict initially. It was basically white European Jews fleeing persecution from Nazi Germany, I mean, after the Nazis had fallen, versus the brown native Arabic population which were settled there. But and that was the way the battle was initially. That was the tribal line. But after the decline of Fatah and after the rise of Hamas, it became primarily religious. It's basically Islam versus Judaism. That's what it's become, unfortunately. Again, I'm not trying to explain the conflict here for those. I mean, there are great resources available to educate yourself more about the conflict in itself and its history. The first thing that I will talk about is it's a counter narrative that I posit. Is that often people say, and when I say this is what I used to believe for a long period of time growing up in Kolkata, was that this is basically a battle of the colonized against the colonizers. There was a narrative initially during October 7th where some people were actually comparing these Hamas terrorists, these monsters, to Indian freedom fighters, saying they're fighting for freedom in the exact same way that, and I tweeted and I'd given an example of my grandfather and what he had told me, saying, you know, this is, there's this one thing that, you know, my grandfather and freedom fighters, they made sure that there was no collateral damage, that they made it a point to show that they were not against British people. They would take great pains. And my grandfather, he got captured he could have just randomly shot in the air and got out. My grandfather served time in Andaman, which was the place where they sent the toughest and the roughest freedom fighters. So he had a choice to kind of shoot his way out, but he didn't, because he was afraid that he would kill innocents. So not killing innocents was their primary objective. Both Indian as well as British, they made it a point to say that we were not against British people, we are against the British colonial structure. It is not against the British people. But obviously, that's why the Indian freedom struggle is special. It is not a tribal conflict. It was not a tribal conflict between Indians and the British. It never was. That's why we are still so much influenced by British culture, because it was never a deep tribal conflict. It never was. So that was a battle between colonizers and colonized. It's not what has happened in Israel. So by the way, I thought this for many years before I read the history. So it is true to an extent that initially there is a flavor of that, because the Europeans, the British and the Americans after World War II, they wanted to settle Jews away from Europe after what Hitler did to them, in a place that was empty, they felt, and which basically means in those days of Winston Churchill, is a place that is not populated by white men. That's considered to be empty. So they were then settled here, and there was a lot of conflict between the Israelites and the native Arab population in Palestine. And so it does look like it is colonized versus the colonialists, but there's one fly in the ointment here in terms of this narrative, because the Jewish population were not really colonialists, because they had actually stayed at that place. They had been expelled from that very place many, many years ago. That's true. And they formed what's known as the diaspora. So it's not like the British, who had absolutely no home base in India, coming here just to exploit our land and our people. It is not like that. And again, the fact was that the Israelis had been there hundreds, thousands of years ago. And this is a problem when you try to justify your behavior to history. That's why I don't. Those of you who follow my podcast, you know that I love history, but I'm not a big fan of using history to justify present day actions. So, but the point that I'm trying to make is that Israelis are definitely not colonizers in that area. As in, they're not conquering a new land to exploit nature and its people. And what I find ironic is that the same progressives who will call Israelis colonizers will balk at calling the Mughals colonizers. They will say, oh, they were not colonizers, they were not colonizers, they came here and they settled, they never left. But the Israelis are colonizers. And the point is, it's not also true. They didn't leave not because they took a conscious choice, it's because they lost their homeland. That's why they couldn't leave. So that's this is the I just want to make the point. This is not a battle between the colonized and the colonizers. So people say, how can you, any Indian should by nature support Palestine because we have suffered for colonialists from colonialism. So how can you not support Palestine? There may be very good reasons to support Palestine, but the colonial colonist angle is bogus. The Israelis are not colonialists in the classical sense of the term. And as I said, the same people who will call them colonialists will not call the Mughals colonialists, even though the Mughals actually are. So the second thing I want to bring to the fore is again that Israel is being castigated for war crimes. They're saying this is war crime. You're imposing collective punishment on people in Gaza. They're not they all of them are not Hamas. So no, here's my, I would say, somewhat contrarian take on this, maybe a little controversial, but the way I look at it is war is bad, and this has always been the nature of war. So to call, if somebody attacks you, you're going to go and bomb their home base. I mean, that's always been the nature of war. So I don't understand why is it called a war crime nowadays. I just don't get it. War is bad. I mean, killing people is bad, but once we get beyond that, war is war, but they're saying it's not war, it's war crime. There is one more step above war. So this is something which I struggle to understand. I mean, the Allies, when they invaded Europe, they didn't pick and choose Nazis. They just went and bombed Dresden to the ground. And these were the heroes. These were the Winston Churchills and the Roosevelts. They bombed Dresden to the ground. They dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima. They weren't like, let's just take out the Emperor Hirohito's personal army. No, they were just carpet bombing whichever place they could. And war is ugly, and that's the way it already has been. I don't remember anybody saying the US committed war crimes in Vietnam. I mean, that's what they did. They burned villages to the ground. They used napalm there. So again, the point that I'm trying to make is this is the nature of war. So what's happened here? And this is again characteristic of a tribal conflict. Hamas started it in this case. They swung with all their might. And it was a very powerful shot, maybe the most powerful shot that anybody has ever taken against Israel since the 1940s. They took the shot. Now Israel is taking their heaviest shot. I mean, that's war. And that's just the way things work. Yes, Israel is immensely more powerful than Palestine. But the Hamas knew that, right? When they swung that. So expecting Israel to somehow calibrate its response because it is aware of its superior military supremacy. I mean, you can say that, but nobody really is going to listen to it, right? Because nobody else has ever listened to it. It's not just a question of Israel. I mean, that's why they have the supremacy, so that they can use it, right? It just makes no sense. I mean, nobody will ask the US to do this. If somebody goes in, when let's say the US goes and attacks the wrong country, that's another thing that the US does. But let's presume that they were right. Let's presume that Saddam Hussein actually worked with Osama bin Laden to attack US on 9/11, which was absolutely a fiction. But let's presume for the argument's sake it is true. Nobody said the US was committing war crimes when it just arbitrarily, willy-nilly bombed the cities in Iraq and Afghanistan. Nobody did that. I mean, they say, we warn people, we drop leaflets, but we all know that, when you're sending rockets like that, people are going to die. Again, this is not to trivialize. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite. What I'm saying is that war is bad, but to me, I don't see what the war crimes part of it is, because war has always been, especially when it is a tribal conflict, has always been about collective punishment. So I just don't see this. Again, it is part of the narrative, but it's also important to point out that this is not really a true narrative. And finally, and this is perhaps the most important point that I'm going to make, is even though I started out by calling it a tribal war, it's really truly not a tribal war. Because in a tribal war, in any war, honestly, there is a presumption. There's a presumption that both sides want to win it. They're in it to win it. Both sides are strategizing to win, to destroy the other in some way or the form. On some form or the other, I'm sorry. But here's where the real thing here is. Hamas does not want to win. It knows it cannot. The superiority that the Israeli army and military has in every respect is just so overwhelming that Hamas does not even want to win, and that is not even their end game. This is not like the Charge of the Light Brigade heroes. You know, first of all, there is nothing heroic in what they did, you know, in raping women, killing babies. But it is not even, and this is where you have to feel for the Palestinian people, that the people who govern them, and again, they're using religion as a tool for radicalization. And that's what happens when you use religion. People think that it is an honor to die. And who are they dying for? They're dying for Hamas. And Hamas doesn't care for Palestinians. And this is an important thing. At least the Israelis care for themselves. Maybe they don't care for anybody else but themselves, but they at least care for themselves. That's the basis of a tribal war is. But why is then Hamas doing what it's doing? The events of October 7th, which were brutal and reprehensible, and they taped it. They videotaped it for a particular reason. They videotaped it so that the Israelis would have it. And once it's videotaped, there is no way that one country can de-escalate. Nobody will say, especially when it's a country like Israel, that somebody breaks into your country, does this kind of barbarity and atrocity, medieval barbarity, and you just, you know, kind of pull your punches. Nobody can do that. They're basically forcing Israel in many ways to do what they're currently doing. So the events of October 7th were carefully calibrated and publicized so that Israel has no option domestically to pull its punches. That is the most terrible thing about the conflict. That the Hamas, those evil monsters, they want Palestinian children to die. They want Israelis to starve them. And you know why they want to do this? Because of money. That's why. Because war with Israel is the way for Hamas to generate money, asking for donations from rich sheikhs. The Hamas leadership is in Qatar, and they are in Europe. So they use this as a way for raising funds, which they siphon off for themselves. So this is the irony. The Hamas top brass sits in Qatar. Their second rank, the fighting guys, are basically under the tunnels, and they keep the Palestinians above so that they get bombed and hammered. This is why they did this. This is what makes it such a terrible war. War is bad. But again, Israel is a combatant in a war. They're fighting a war in the way wars have always been fought, and they're looking after their own people. Hamas is not even doing that. Hamas is also ensuring that their people, their own people, the people they claim to represent, are the worst affected. So that's why, for me, Hamas is pure evil. There's very little, I mean, just to see people like, you know, I don't want to take names, but to see many people in India, essentially when the attacks were going on, criticizing Israel at that point of time while they were killing Israelis in this way, just goes to show how deep the indoctrination of Hamas is, even among people who profess to be liberal. And this to me was shocking, because, okay, maybe they care for Palestinians, maybe whatever it is. But if you care for Palestinians, you know that this is a cynical move on the part of Hamas to basically fundraise over the dead bodies of their own people. And I cannot think of any other tribal conflict or any other war where you've had one of the major participants behave like this. So that's it for today. And again, I know this was perhaps a very depressing, and it is depressing. War is depressing. And as a father, seeing dead children on either side, dead ch children don't have religion. I know it might sound like a cliche, and somebody might say it's cringe, but when you become a father and you see children your daughter's age, I mean, you can't think that this person deserved it, or this it's because of this other person's historic decision. You can't, right? You can't. If you see a father crying over their dead child, I don't know how anybody can say this is fake, how anybody can blame the father. I don't care what the father is saying, what the father is thinking, what the mother is thinking. If you have a dead child in your hand, how do you care? How do you care about anything in this world? I do not. I cannot understand the nature, and I will never understand the nature of the magnitude of this tragedy, both from the sides of the Israelis as well as from Palestine. And I have sympathy for both, great sympathy for both. I have none for Hamas, none for Hamas whatsoever. And I feel bad for Palestinians, absolutely. And so I wish we had a more cheerful podcast, but that's it for today. Maybe next time we'll talk about the World Cup. Till then, stay well, and thanks. Bye-bye.